Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to it. It's Friday. It's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Danny Burke, producing, engineering, contributing today. Busy show, a really good show. Excited to talk with so many folks today. Coach Tom Osborne with us in about 15 minutes. Get his thoughts on his pitching form for Haymarket Saturday night. But talk some college football with the legend, Coach Osborne. Coming up at 4:25, we'll get into a bit of the Mayweather-McGregor showdown tomorrow night. That'll be at Longwell's with ESPN FM 101.5 1480. Lars Anderson, Bleacher Report, incredible writer, is just so talented. He did a story on a high school senior that passed away 2 years ago on the football field. And if you haven't read it, please read it. Lars will join us in 1 hour and get his thoughts on just a tremendous piece of journalism. Derek Peterson of Hail Varsity going to be with us at Dr. Petey 15. Get his thoughts on the week that was with Nebraska football practice. And then Southeast football, Northeast football tonight. Can stream that over on sister station KFOR. Ryan Gatula, head coach of the Knights, will join us. We'll get a preview as I will be off to call that game tonight at 7. So loaded up, excited to be with you on a Friday. Can join us 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Those are the numbers. Can tap the line, Schillingbridge, Cork, and Tap House. Well, you look at this season to be, and it has shifted from the narrative of, and there are those still out there that believe 6-6, 7-5, but it has shifted a bit nationally because more and more and more people have picked up on Tanner Lee, on Coach Riley, on Nebraska. It shifted. And you have Romy the other day talking about the cool coach Mike Riley, and Derek Peterson asked Riley about it yesterday. That was pretty good after practice. But you have a shift of kind of ruling Nebraska out. Not all have done that, but some did, and some still do question, where's this football team going to be when we're talking about them at the end of November versus the end of August? There's such a travel-packed journey to get into. There are games. There are coin flips. There are injuries. There's offensive identity. There are strengths. There's scheme. Shifting defensively. New style offensively. Not foreign style offensively to the coaches or their quarterback. But it's new this year. How will it work? Great write-up, HailVarsity.com. And Vogue's is so good to get you going in the morning. Do you hear that buzzing is what he titled it. Do you hear it? I hear it. I think you're feeling it a bit if you're a Nebraska fan because you're hearing a lot. I mean, you're glued to whatever you can get your hands on. Hail Varsity, radio, TV, the web, your phone, it's there. And you're getting more and more escalated about this season. And maybe you've changed your mind 150 times. Maybe you've stayed the course with your prediction. But I think it's been altered. I think it's been altered quite a bit across the college football landscape. Why? Because you have, first and foremost, you have Mort. It's a hell of a quarterback Nebraska's got. And then you have the Manning family, man, that Tanner Lee can throw the football. And you have Steve Calhoun, quarterback guru. And then you have Mr. Senior Bowl, Phil Savage, joined us last week. Wow. Wow, he can play some ball. Now you got Stuart Mandel, longtime college football writer. Then you have Bruce Feldman, longtime college football writer. The only thing missing is a Hall of Fame coach or two or four or some peers. And they need to see it before they comment on it. And they'll have a chance up close and personal in Lincoln in October. If you're from Madtown or if you're from the Shoe. That's what's missing is the performance. Coach Riley asked about that offense yesterday after practice. It's awesome to talk about the buzz and feel the buzz and be positive. It's a week out. I'm excited as all get out, man. Can't wait for the season to get here. Can't wait to see what unfolds. Really. I mean, there's so many good games, so many question marks. And how's this team going to fare? How are they going to fight? How are they going to handle it? I feel pretty good about just being in it every week. And there are some games where they don't need to be in it. I mean, it should be done after a quarter. I think they can do well. But from an offensive look, what's it going to look like for Nebraska? Coach Riley tried to answer that yesterday.
I'm excited. And at the same time, it's one of those things we got to go out and do it. You know, I mean, it's got to be out there on the field. And I think that efficiency.
Did that just stop dead? Okay. He was getting into efficiency. That was wonderful. Did it get cut short? Okay. Well, anywho, he's excited about efficiency. Maybe we'll stay off the audio today. But what you have here with that buzz is Nebraska, instead of being a team that's not on the radar, and let's be straight, 3 months ago they weren't, until this narrative has been created, they are now kind of on the radar. But they're one of those teams that they were kind of a trendy dark horse team during the summer last year, maybe a surprise team. Look, they're not going to be a surprise team. Either they win the West or they don't. And you're going to need a damn good record to win the West this year. Just because Wisconsin's schedule is much more manageable than yours. It is. So you're going to have to be near flawless in conference action. And you got some big dogs on that schedule. Not that you can't go hunt. But you can't slip up. Your margin for error is very, very minimal compared to Wisconsin's. Now that said, Wisconsin does have to travel to Iowa and to Lincoln. You have a chance to do it. But here, you have Nebraska as this other team that's just not even really being talked about. Now the quarterback's being talked about, and they've paired that quarterback to a coach that they really like, the national media. Jim Rome, and you got a good quarterback, you got a good coach who's won with good quarterbacks because he's made them good quarterbacks. Hey, Nebraska can do something. So they're still not a sleeper, but they are now that under-the-radar team. Are they a Penn State to be in 17? I don't know. That's a lot to ask. But you get one big win in Eugene. You follow it up with the monster home win against Wisconsin. Are you unbeaten and ranked in the top five for Ohio State, similar to last year, with them coming in? Could be. You could also be 4-2 by the time the old Buckeyes get here. And they could take a sledgehammer to your chin, and then here comes the bye week. With what's left for you? Oh, yeah. Redemption in November. Win out. So, interesting. We had the rest of that from Riley. Okay, here it is when it comes to his offense and how it'll look. Let's talk appearance here.
Efficiency is, for me, the number one goal. great snap. Now let's play.
Okay, so he wants and feels good about the offense, but from an efficiency, what are you going to do well, and can you continue to kind of make it click? Can you be efficient offensively? It's a good thought. So coming up, Tom Osborne, get his thoughts on the Nebraska season. We'll get his thoughts on throwing out that first pitch at Haymarket Saturday with his Heisman winners. Lars Anderson in an hour. Derek Peterson coming up. Other thought here with Nebraska being that surprise team. That storyline is out there as a surprise team. Tanner Lee, year three for Mike. Diaco's impact. There's so much of that in this narrative with Nebraska, and it's kind of been noticed and picked up upon. I'm anxious for it. Will it be a reality for Nebraska? Riley is pretty calm. He's pretty comfortable with this. And you look at the offenses they have wound down, and they handed out scholarships yesterday to a number of seniors. And you got to feel great for a guy like Hoppus and Ron and Conrad. I mean, just big-time winners, kids that have continued to bust it. That's impressive. You know, you look at this Nebraska season, too, when we talk buzz and what it is, and the buzz is as loud as it's been for a while. I think maybe you go back to last year, make that 2 years ago, year one of Riley. I mean, it was super, super high. The buzz was high. There were some of the question marks with, you know, the quarterback skill set and what's the offense going to look like, and defensively, hey, is it going to be easier because the defense has suffered some beatdowns and blowouts? That is still there. That is still the question. That is the ultimate buzzkill. You're hyped about your team. You're excited about your team. You're feeling good about what they can be, and they go get dismantled. It happens in college football. Penn State got dismantled by Michigan last year. What they end up doing, they end up winning out, except for the USC game. How many times did Iowa get smoked last year? A lot. North Dakota State, that wasn't a smoke job, but they left bruises and blood. What did they do? Well, they found a way. They bounced back. They beat Michigan. Michigan limped to the finish. And they could have been undefeated as well. Ohio State, what did they do after Penn State? Well, they found a way to beat Michigan. Clemson smoked them. And then there's USC. How did their year start? Carry the one, 52-6 against Bama. They started out 4-2. They worked out. They absolutely worked out. So even if it doesn't go all rosy and perfect to start out, can you weather it? And last year's team didn't do that. They'll tell you. They didn't finish out like they started. They've lost some confidence. They got beat up. Can you, you're not expected to go undefeated. But can you finish way better than you have in past years? A lot of those storylines. Nebraska, one of those teams that, you know, they could surprise you. And it's because of quarterback and Riley. And that national narrative getting steam. Pretty good stuff. I want to remind you to check out HailVarsity.com. And Joshua Moore, talented wide receiver out of Yoakum, Texas. He is doing a diary with Hail Varsity. And please read his story. It's called The Story of the Chosen from Joshua Moore, courtesy of Joshua Moore on HailVarsity.com. We will get caught up with Derek Peterson. Excited about that. Dr. Pedia, Hail Varsity. His thoughts in about an hour on how the week's gone. Legendary coach for Nebraska. Three-time national champion. Coach, about said coach and doctor. Yes, Dr. Tom Osborne, legendary coach, will be with us here in about 5 minutes. We'll run down Lars Anderson and his heart-wrenching story of Bleacher Report. And Ryan Gatula, a Southeast. That's on the docket. What's your buzz level like? And I'm not asking from a drinky drink standpoint. I'm asking from a fandom standpoint. You're a week and a day out from 2017. Do you agree that nationally Nebraska is getting a little more love, getting looked at a little more fondly? Does that kind of help hype you up? Or have you always kind of just done what the players are supposed to do, is put the blinders on to the noise outside? Listen, Nebraska's profile has kind of been upped because they've been talked about nationally through the vehicle of social media. It works. Now, go hammer it, go do it on the field. Reminder to you, if you plan to go out tonight, be sure to make a plan to get home safe. If not, make a plan anyway, because while your plans can change, one thing won't. You get caught drinking and driving, you'll face a DWI that could cost you up to $12,000 in fines and in fees and in jail time. And you'll be required to install that interlock device on your vehicle. So remember, when you're making plans, make sure you have that sober ride home before you go out. Remember, you drink, you drive, you lose. A message from the Nebraska Department of Transportation and Highway Safety Office. Tom Osborne, legendary coach, will be at Haymarket for Legends Night tomorrow night with Eric Crouch, Johnny the Jet, Mike Rozier. Simultaneous first pitch. We'll talk about pitching mechanics and some football. Tom Osborne's next on Hail Varsity.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Welcome in a legendary coach, and he'll be part of Legends Night at Haymarket Park. Tom Osborne is with us, part of the simultaneous first pitch. Going to be going on at Haymarket. Game time Saturday, 6:45. Can log on saltdogs.com/legends. Meet and greet with the Heisman winners, Mike Rozier, and, of course, Eric Crouch, Johnny the Jet Rogers, and Coach Osborne. Coach, thanks for taking a few minutes. Nice to speak with you again. How's your day going?
Well, everything's fine, Chris. It's good to talk to you again.
It is my pleasure to spend a few minutes with you. And, you know, it's going to be a great night at Haymarket on Saturday, a chance to learn more for so many folks about what you're doing with teammates, a chance to see you and some of the Nebraska greats throughout a simultaneous first pitch, and just going to be a fantastic atmosphere. Is this something that you're excited about, specifically the chance to show off the arm? I did my research, Coach, and I know you were quite a baseball player back in Hastings.
Well, as you know, Chris, that was a long time ago. So I think I'm supposed to throw out the first pitch at 6:15, and I think what they're thinking is that the game starts at 6:45, and the ball will probably get to home plate about 6:45. So I'm not going to throw 95 miles an hour. I'll guarantee you that. It'll be good to see Mike Rozier and Johnny Rogers and Eric Crouch again, and I guess we're going to sign a few baseballs. Those balls are small, you know, they're smaller than footballs and they're harder to sign, but I think we'll be able to sign a few, so should be a good night. And I believe that the Salt Dogs are kind enough to honor teammates in some way, and so we're always looking for more people to volunteer to be mentors, and so we hope that we get some people to sign up for teammates as well.
Tom Osborne is with us, Hail Varsity Radio, a chance to learn more about teammates and see Coach Osborne, Johnny Rogers, Eric Crouch, and Michael Heisman, Mike Rozier, Saturday night. And I think your fastball is still probably pretty good. I don't know that it'll take a half hour to get from the mound to home. But I was talking to Eric earlier this week, and I kind of put the over-under at about 75 miles per hour on what the radar gun would register your fastball. Is that fair?
Maybe 20 years ago it was in that range. I don't know what it is today, Chris. I threw out a pitch up in Omaha for their baseball team, and I was in my street shoes, and my foot slipped. And I think the ball hit about 10 feet in front of the home plate, so I hope I can do better on this occasion.
Have you been practicing at all?
No, I haven't. I haven't thrown a ball in a lot of years.
That's all right. Coach Osborne is with us here on Hail Varsity. So, Coach, you've been pretty well renowned about your ability to evaluate and develop talent and recruit. And I mean, the record and the teams speak for themselves. You also cared very, very deeply for every guy that played for you. What's it like and what's it been like for you to continue recruiting the number of mentors? Because teammates started back in the early 90s, and it's continued to grow and grow, not just in Nebraska, but across the United States. How have you been able to recruit just tremendous mentors?
Well, Chris, that's where I spend most of my time now. And so I'm in Lincoln and Omaha quite a bit, but I'm also all around the state. And so we're in big towns, small towns, and currently we have 153 chapters, 153 school districts that we serve. So we have come pretty close to blanketing the state of Nebraska. We have a heavy presence in Iowa as well, and we're starting out in Wyoming and Kansas, and probably starting in South Dakota sometime in the next few months. So it has grown. We're mentoring over 1,000 or 8,000 kids right now. And, of course, we're graduating around 600-700 every year from high school. So so it has grown, and it has become more efficient. And I think the quality of our matches has also improved dramatically over the years. We've figured out a few things that seem to work, and so it's a very good program, and we hope we can get more people engaged.
Tom Osborne is with us, Hail Varsity Radio. A couple more minutes. Gracious enough to give us a few minutes. Teammates will be featured, appropriately so, Saturday at Haymarket Park. The Salt Dogs and Sioux City. And you have a chance to see Legends Night on Saturday. Coach Osborne, Johnny Rogers, Eric Crouch, Mike Rozier. First pitch around 6:15, as Coach told you. Game at 6:45, and a chance to meet and greet and get some signatures from just three Husker legends that played, and of course Coach Osborne, and can log on saltdogs.com/legends is how you can log on and get your tickets if you haven't already. Coach, 1997 is going to be honored Wisconsin Week, as you and Coach McBride and members of your staff and that 97 team will be honored. Does it feel like, does it seem like 20 years since a national title?
Well, it's gone pretty fast, Chris, and I, in many ways, it doesn't seem that long ago. But, you know, time flies, and it'll be really nice to see a lot of those guys back again. And we had a very fine team that year. Had a little good fortune down at Missouri at one time, and I was just down and spent a little time with Scott Frost last week, and of course he had a very good year that year himself. And so a lot of great players on that team, a lot of good memories, and so I'll look forward to seeing them again.
Did that team, as you were getting ready, and 1996 was a really good year as well, but you're coming off back-to-back championships, and a lot of Nebraska fans know what happened in Tempe and then Texas, but you guys really rallied, in my opinion, pretty well against a good Virginia Tech team, and then it kind of springboarded you. That's how I looked at it, and you had some incredible leadership. Was that anything that you had to worry about heading into 97, or did you feel really comfortable with the accountability on the team to go try for another one?
Well, I remember that Jason Peter and Grant Wistrom came in shortly after the 96 season, and I thought they were going to tell me that they were going to declare for the draft, because they were both juniors that year, and I think they both probably would have been first-round draft picks. And they said, well, you know, we lost two games this year in 96. I said, I was aware of that. I remember that too. And they said, well, we didn't think that was good enough, and we're going to come back, and we're going to win them all. And so that was the kind of attitude they had, and they were guys who really drove things in the off season and winter conditioning, spring football, and summer conditioning. And their leadership and the leadership of a lot of other players on that team were pretty phenomenal. We had Aaron Graham and some other guys that really were pretty outstanding. And so, and of course, Amon Green came on and had a great year as a running back. And I found that good players make you a lot smarter coach. And we had good players, and they had a remarkable attitude.
Coach, Bill Snyder is going to keep doing his thing down at Kansas State. I know Coach Snyder's had some health issues, but he is set for another season down in Manhattan, and he is I'm intrigued to see how Kansas State does in the Big 12 and what kind of year Coach Snyder can have. Have you had much of a chance to touch base with him or follow up with him on as the season approaches? How is he doing?
Well, I think he's doing all right. I either talk to him on the phone or correspond with him maybe 3 or 4 times a year. And, of course, that health setback that he had so many letters and phone calls that the last communication I had from him was just pretty much of a standard mailing that I'm sure they sent to hundreds, if not thousands, of people. And so I really haven't had a chance to talk to him personally over the last couple months. But what I hear through the grapevine is that he's doing fine. And I think most people feel they'll have a pretty good team. They've got a good quarterback, and that's always a good place to start. So I'm sure they'll be very, very competitive again this year.
Go out and see Coach Osborne, the three Heisman winners, Legends Night at Haymarket Saturday. 6:15, a simultaneous first pitch with Coach Osborne, Eric Crouch, Mike Rozier, Johnny Rogers, and support teammates, mentoring, and can log on and get your tickets, saltdogs.com/legends. Coach, before we go, a thought on this 2017 season for Nebraska football, and Coach Riley, and what is ahead for Nebraska. What are your thoughts? I don't know how often, if you've been to practice recently, but how do you feel about the team heading into this season?
Well, my guess is, Chris, that I don't know anymore, and probably not as much as you do or most of the other fans. And most of what I know is just what I've read in the paper, and I know Nebraska fans are always optimistic, and so hopefully it will go well. It looks like there will be 3, 4, maybe 5 games that will be very competitive, and as you know, sometimes it just depends on the bounce of the football. And 2 years ago we had some bad bounces, and last year we had a few good bounces, and that's kind of the way things even out. So hopefully it'll go well, and they'll have a very fine year. It's obviously a transition year, because I think they're going to have a different style at quarterback, and of course they've also changed the defensive structure, and so it'll be interesting to see how all those changes work out, and let's hope for the best.
Coach Tom Osborne with us. See him Saturday at Haymarket Park. Simultaneous first pitch. I bet he's going to hit that radar number, like I was saying, 75. Coach Tom Osborne, Johnny Rogers, Eric Crouch, and Mike Rozier at Haymarket to help honor teammates and the Salt Dogs on Saturday night around 6:15. Game starts at 6:45. Coach, it's a pleasure to speak with you again. You're so gracious with your time. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us here on Hail Varsity.
Well, thank you, Chris. Good to talk to you.
Big thanks to Coach Osborne for giving us a few minutes. Go watch him and his Heisman winners at Haymarket tomorrow. 6:15 is that simultaneous pitch, saltdogs.com/legends. And yeah, he's right. Transition year, how's it work? With a pocket guy and a 3-4. Should be interesting. We'll talk some more football. We'll get into McGregor, Mayweather. That's on the way, too, with Hail Varsity.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
25 minutes from now, it's Lars Anderson, a Bleacher Report. We'll get caught up with Lars, his heartbreaking story of a high school senior that passed away. And please read the story for yourself, Bleacher Report. On that, but Lars catches up with us here in 25 minutes. Coach Gatula, Lincoln Southeast, an hour from now. And Derek Peterson, Dr. Petey 15. That's where you find him on Twitter with Hail Varsity. We'll get caught up with Dr. Petey and his thoughts on the week that was with Nebraska football. Still a chance for you, the gift card to Lincoln Racecourse. Listen for that cue to call between now and 6. A chance as we get rolling next week for you to win Nebraska-Arkansas State tickets. We'll get you qualified throughout the week and give those away on a Thursday. And then a week from today, we are down at Miller Time Pub. That'll be awesome. 4 to 6, Miller Time Pub inside Cornhusker. That'll be just awesome. It's a great bar, good food. Excited for that. Now, Haymarket Park is where you can be Saturday night. You'll see Coach Osborne and the gang, and we've talked about that. And thanks to Charlie and then the folks at the Salt Dogs for being so awesome this week with Coach Osborne and Coach and Eric Crouch and Johnny the Jet. If you're interested in Mayweather-McGregor, that is going on down at Longwell's in the rail yard, and you can watch the fight for $25. And Danny, you're an MMA guy. I mean, when I say that, you don't have you're wearing sleeves. Kidding. Sorry, it's not very nice. An MMA guy would crumple me up and throw me away. So it's all good. But what I'm asking here is, I've paid for boxing pay per view. I didn't have to do that last Saturday because ESPN broadcast Bud Crawford. But this is a pay-per-view deal. What's this thing running? If I'm saying, Danny, I'm running to your apartment and I'm watching Mayweather-McGregor, what's this going to cost me?
I think it's around $100, at least what it might have started.
And do they punch you, no pun intended, below the waist for it to be HD?
I'm not sure about HD, but I know that they've lowered it because I think people were like thinking about not getting it, so they lowered it from like $100 to about maybe $95 to $90 now.
So $90 to $95 with tax, and then the HD charge. What I'm telling you to do, if you want to see this thing, I got my wife's birthday today. Love you, honey. It's your birthday. I'll take you to dinner tomorrow night. But I'm gonna sneak out after that, get down to Longwell's for $25, and I'm gonna say, "Here's your $25. Thank you." And I'm going to watch the thing on enormous TVs. And I think Nick and Rob are going to be down there doing their thing. So just try to save you some money if you want to see this thing. And there's a part of me that's curious about this. What's going to happen? I mean, Mayweather, Pacquiao, I mean, that thing was, I wish it would have been better. It's my point.
Yeah, very disappointing.
Right?
Yeah.
Because that's, I will rush shelled out for that. I think I still owe him. That's the alternative. You got a bunch of your boys coming over. Oops, forgot my wallet. Right?
Oh, yeah.
And you're out of hundy. So let me ask you this. And here's some comments from Mayweather as they wrapped up their promotional tour yesterday, and Floyd's being Floyd. I'll say this about Floyd yesterday. He was a little more respectful than I expected.
Conor McGregor had a hell of a career, still got a hell of a career. He's a hell of a fighter, a hell of a fighter. He's a stand-up guy. He's a tough competitor. It's not going to be an easy fight. It's going to be blood, sweat, and tears Saturday. That's what we're here to get the fans, and that's what we want to get the people all around the world.
Okay, so look, we want the world to watch this. And he's a great fighter, hell of a competitor. That's impressive. But you flip it around, and McGregor is more and more annoyed. And he is sick and tired to this point of being doubted that he can transition. How long have we talked Nebraska football and kind of the blind faith? Is the offense going to work? Will the defensive transition hurt? Or will it be awesome? You don't know. You can err one way or the other, thinking it's going to be too tough to overcome. Or maybe it is tougher to do than expected. That's the football side of things. Just for this fight, he is counted out, except his home country has put together most of their gross domestic product revenue and put it on him. But McGregor, he's sick of being questioned about. He's not happy.
I certainly know I'm going to win. I certainly know that. I think he has a big-time gambling problem from seeing him. He gambles on half times and things like that. He shows what his wins are, never shows what the losses are. Maybe that's why he's in this position he is in, and he had to take this fight.
Wow. Yeah, Floyd's broke, so he's got to fight me. more from McGregor and just the confidence oozing out of that beard.
I'm going to outbox this man at his own game. That's how skilled and how much of a different level I am to him. And when it's all said and done, you know what? I'm going to feel a little bit sad because you should have all kept your mouth shut. You should have left me over on that other game that I'm from, that more ruthless game where we bounce heads off the canvas and drill them into the floor. You should have left me where I was because this man is not on my level. He's not even a quarter of the man I am.
Let it ring, baby. So here are the questions. Does Conor have a shot? You just listen to him. He says yes. Many think he does. Danny Burke, MMA guy. You've watched boxing. Does he have a shot?
I think he does. I'm Team McGregor. I'm not.
Of course you are.
Got the Irish in me.
You, yes, you do.
Not the biggest MMA guy, so I don't want to be labeled as the biggest.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I don't want people harping on me.
You've watched,
yes,
is my point.
I've watched. I started watching when McGregor made some noise, and then I started getting to the UFC a little bit. But, you know, like they say, anything can happen, and that left hand he's got is deadly. If you catch one throw from McGregor, anything can happen.
Floyd's lefty.
Yeah.
He's kind of that's all I'm saying. So, okay, Conor's bigger and a stronger fighter. But here's the thing. It's boxing. It's the sweet science. Can he be bigger and stronger at that aspect of his game? Against a guy like Floyd. Floyd's 40, but he doesn't feel 40. Here's some other questions I have, because you have most boxing folks holding their nose with this thing. Like the pure boxing fans are like, what the hell is this? It's a freak show. I'll watch for the pure freak show, sideshow mentality of it. I kind of do want to see what happens here. Is something crazy going to happen? I don't know. Is it going to be a boring fight? I pray to the Lord, no. Especially if you're shelling out $100 for it, which means if it's not the fight that lives up to the hype, it's okay because you can spend $25 down at Longwell's and not feel so bad about it. Does this thing go the distance? Is it a decision? Is it like they're playing tag? Or is it just nonstop Armageddon punches thrown? Let's treat this like a $2 steak and just start rolling each other. How does this thing go?
I'm thinking it's going to go one of two ways. It's going all
knockout, or
it's going all 12, and Mayweather's winning by decision, or McGregor's knocking him out. He says within four.
Okay,
prediction.
So he'll be out of gas. Possibly after four, if that's his game plan.
I don't think the conditioning is going to hurt him, but Mayweather will get him.
All right, we'll wind down hour one.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
10 minutes, Lars Anderson, Bleacher Report will join us. Coach Osborne with us last 30 minutes or so to tell us about his first pitch upcoming at Haymarket and some football talk. Thanks to Coach Tom Osborne. If you missed any part of the program in hour one, or if you're in and out getting ready for some Friday night shenanigans, you're welcome to check out the podcast, HailVarsity.com. Go there, just go to the More section, and underneath there, you'll find Hail Varsity Radio. Take the podcast with us. Can go to the ESPN Lincoln app or iTunes. Again, reminding you, Joshua Moore, speaking of Moore, will continue to do his diary with Hail Varsity. So the four-star wideout from Yoakum, Texas, tells you about his life, his drive, and what's been going on with him as he starts his senior season. Lars Anderson has a very heart-wrenching story about a senior quarterback in New Jersey that passed away. Lars will tell you about that. Okay, Derek Peterson will join us of HailVarsity.com. We'll get his thoughts on week three. We'll make it week four now. Bit off. Week four of Husker preseason, as they'll have a game week ready with Arkansas State next week. 466-3776. 466-3776. 800-825-5865. We got into the buzz that has been growing for Nebraska nationally. I think it's getting enormous. Think about blowing up a balloon. And then it goes, pop. Well, I don't think it's a pop, but it's the larger water balloon that you may throw at your brother or his friends versus the tiny one. Tiny one maybe be more accurate with, but if the big one hits, it's towel time. Let's get you qualified. Some awesome recruiting news with Greg Smith of Hale Varsity. He is down in Beatrice tonight doing a profile on Cam Jurgens. The message board's incredible interaction with Nebraska fans all over the country. And, of course, up-to-the-minute breaking news and inside information. It's all for you at HaleVarsity.com. We'll take caller 5, caller 6 right now, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Caller 5, caller 6 right now, a six-month online subscription for you to HaleVarsity.com, the ultimate online fan experience. Can dial up. Danny will get you hooked up. And it's 6 months for free for you right before football season. Thank you for checking us out with Hale Varsity. 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Caller 5, caller 6 can make it happen with that subscription to HaleVarsity.com. Caller 5, caller 6. All right. Now, I don't know if you had a chance to get caught up and read Lars's story that dropped on the 23rd, but it is heart-wrenching. It is pretty pretty sad. And Lars spends some time with the family of a lost son. Not a great or uplifting topic or discussion, but a story that's pretty real. And Lars takes you behind the scenes with it. Lars Anderson, tremendous writer and storyteller of Bleacher Report. Lars will be next. Derek Peterson of Hale Varsity coming up. It's Hale Varsity Radio, Hale Varsity Magazine, HaleVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome to Hale Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hale Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back in Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. It's football season around the corner for the college level. High school football's been ongoing the last week or so, and it cranks up here with the opening night last night in the state of Nebraska. More football tonight. A tremendous writer from the state of Nebraska, senior writer with Bleacher Report, Lars Anderson, joins us. New York Times bestselling author, his latest book on Bruce Arians, A Quarterback Whisper. Lars, you did a story that came out August 23rd on Twitter, the hardest story I've ever written on the tragic death of Evan Murray, teenage quarterback. I don't know where to start other than to say thanks for your time today and thanks for your story. Lars, what an amazing story, sir, and what a sad story. What possessed you to follow up with this and share Evan's story? Because it's heart-wrenching, man.
It's a hard story to sort of distill into just a few minutes. It's a 5,000-word piece on this kid, Evan Murray, who was a senior high school quarterback at Warrens Hills High in New Jersey, who two autumns ago took a couple big hits in a game and ended up dying about 30 minutes after the final hit he took. And I had read about Evan when it happened, and there was this big sort of outpouring of support to the family. Dan Quinn wrote letters, Peyton Manning, he wore number 18 in honor of Peyton, and Eli sent a nice letter, and just the whole football community kind of mourned, and then, you know, everybody just sort of moves on, and that's just how life is. And I always kind of want to know story behind the story, like how the family was dealing with it. And I stayed on this story for a long time, and I first reached out to the family by just a handwritten letter, just saying I was really touched by Evan's story, the little bit I knew about it. If they felt like trusting me, I would love to come and spend some time with them. And really this kind of back and forth between myself and different family members took place place for quite a while, and I never wanted to do anything that they weren't comfortable with. And, you know, kind of in the meantime, I had written a long story on Philip Lutzenkirchen, the tight end from Auburn who died in a car accident, and I sent them that story, and they ultimately decided that they could trust me. So I went out to New Jersey and spent several days with the Murray family. Their honesty was just so overwhelming. They're just unflinching honesty. They didn't hide their pain from me. And it's because I think they're incapable of hiding their pain. And I think this is, I think my strength as a writer is to feel other people and to be extremely empathetic. And I sort of just allowed myself to slip into their emotions, and you know, and then I produced the piece. And it was hard for me to write, especially because, as you know, Chris, I've got a 2.5-year-old son, and Evan has been with me ever since I went out with them, and I think of Evan every night as I'm tucking in Lincoln, and you know, just some horrible things happened. You know, Evan ended up dying in the ambulance, and his dad was in the front seat, and his mom was in the state of Michigan, and to have her son die essentially on a football field and her being several states away was very difficult, and it remains very difficult. I was able to kind of reconstruct Evan's last day, because when I went out to New Jersey, the family was, again, so open that they invited all of Evan's friends, and a lot of them even made special trips back from college to different places where they were around the country to spend a day with me. And at one point, I think there was 18 of Evan's buddies sitting in a circle around me in the living room, and we were just talking and sharing stories. So I really got a sense of who Evan was, and I was really able to piece together the final hours of his life. And then when I went out to New Jersey with Kelly, we drove around their little hometown there, and went to all of Evan's favorite spots and had a nice lunch. And I know that the family was extremely nervous before the story came out. I was extremely nervous because you never know how people dealing with still extended grief how they're going to deal with seeing their story in print for the first time, especially when you're dealing with people who aren't public figures. They're private. They're just kind of like you and me. And I got a call from Kelly, mom. Actually, it was her friend who called me with on speaker, because Kelly couldn't communicate, and just thanking me for doing it, and for putting, you know, for having Evan's name re-enter a national conversation. And, you know, Chris, I've been asked to do several radio shows, and I just have respectfully declined, because I just sort of want this story to speak for itself. And of course, I always come on with you and talk to you about anything, because you're my friend. But, you know, I just want the story just to kind of to speak for itself. And it's not a condemnation on football. I mean, I'm not going to sort of give away the whole story, but it's complicated as to why Evan passed away. And it wasn't just because of football. There were other factors. He was vulnerable because of other factors. Mm-hmm. But certainly it played a role in it. And I think what the story has done, and this story is taken off over social media unlike anything I've ever experienced. I think it's just making people consider, do I want my kid playing this really, really violent game? And that's sort of what the goal was. And I still think I'll let Lincoln play if he wants to. I've heard from just people from literally all around the world, celebrities, non-celebrities, and so it's something that I'm extremely proud of. I think it's the best piece of journalism I've ever done, and that's saying something. I've written a lot of books and a lot of SI cover stories and all of that, but I think I was able to connect to this story in a way I couldn't with others. I think, and a lot of it goes back to the fact that I'm a new dad.
Well, and you have your kids on your mind a lot, Lars. We'll talk about our families, and Lars Anderson with us here, Bleacher Report senior writer, Hail Varsity Radio. At Lars Anderson 71 on his story, came out the 23rd, just a couple of days ago, on Bleacher Report on the tragic death of Evan Murray, a 17-year-old, just awesome dude from all reports from friends, and in your story, a quarterback, a leader, a kid that wanted to be a writer, he wanted to go to Michigan, and it was all right there. And he passed away, and please read the story. And people are talking, Lars. People are thinking. And I want to go back to something you said a little bit ago about your time in Jersey, sitting around with 18 to 20 of Evan's buddies. And these guys were all kind of birds of a feather. They're all really, really smart kids. They're all successful. They're all doing well at some well-known and major universities, a lot of them Ivy League schools. And these guys came back to spend time and share their thoughts. Did talking and reminiscing with you about Evan, was that something that was hard for them to do? Were they able to kind of communicate their love for him? Did it help? Did talking help? Talking to you help them?
Yeah, I mean, and that was, yes, it did. And with the kids, there was no tears. I think there was this great group dynamic, and it was all, you know, I would equate it to just like going to a bar with friends and over beers telling stories. There was mm-hmm. no alcohol involved in this case, obviously, but it was just sort of reminiscing and telling all these goofball stories of Evan. And there was one who was his best friend who was quoted in the story, who was a kid a lot like me. He's very sensitive, and he's at Cornell now. And I ended up following up with him. You know, I can sort of always, like, see the good storytellers in a group, and I knew right away that this was a kid I wanted to get more out of. So I followed up with him over the phone individually. And, and that also was sort of my pitch to the family, is that it's been my experience that when somebody shares their pain with me about a certain tragedy they've gone through, you know, I wrote a whole book on the Tuscaloosa tornado that took so many lives, and I really focus on four young people who died in that tragedy. And it's been my experience, every family has had a positive experience by sharing their story. I think it gives sort of legitimacy to the story. It sort of puts a new value on somebody's life, and again, it's just so easy to move on for others outside of the family to move on, and the family is just left here devastated, doesn't know how to make sense of this. And perhaps this story can help the Murray family, you know, just come to grips with what has happened. And you know, I there's quite a few details at the end of the story when we're kind of back in present time of how, you know, Kelly just hasn't been able to move on. Tom, the dad, still has trouble even remembering how he gets to work in the morning. Kelly hasn't gone back to work, and just 2 years later, and Evan was their only son, only child. And I have this hope and this sense that this is happening already, that positive things are coming from this story. And I think it's also shedding more light on Evan's story. And, you know, who knows? Maybe some film company will want to come along and do a documentary on Evan and just, again, sort of give more sort of value to his life. And mm-hmm. and it wasn't that he just, you know, passed away in vain. And so, yeah, the whole experience was good. And Kelly Murray she was emotional when I was with her. But she's able to keep it together for the most part. And, you know, we have a video of Kelly on Bleacher Report where she's talking to us, and I'd like to, you know, if you watch that video, it's a hard video to watch because she's very emotional in the video, but I think we kind of made a mistake, and we shot that video after being with her for 2 days, and this was at the end of an exhausting 2 days. We really should have done the video in the middle of it when she wasn't emotionally worn out. Mm-hmm. But you know, if you watch that video, you're definitely going to want to read the story because she kind of says it all about Evan and the kind of person he was.
Well, that comes through. I mean, it shines in the story that you did. Lars Anderson, Bleacher Report with us on Hail Varsity Radio. And Lars did a really tough story. It's a remarkable story. And it's a heartbreaking story on Evan Murray, teenage quarterback from New Jersey that passed away 2 years ago. And the family spent time with Lars. Evan's friends talked about Evan, the person and the player. And Lars, to wind down, and thanks for spending a few minutes with us on your story. And I mean, I know we're buddies, but you're incredible at what you do. And again, thanks for sharing it with my listeners. Evan's coach, how is his life 2 years later?
Well, he's retired from football, and that was just sort of his decision. Evan didn't impact that, and his coach is real adamant that, you know, it wasn't football that took Evan, and he just kind of says in the story, it's just Evan's death is a life isn't fair kind of thing, but it haunts him. It haunts everybody in that community because he was such a special kid and bright-eyed, smiling, wasn't doing anything wrong, always did the right thing, the kind of kid you want your daughter to date. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, I mean, the coach, he went back and examined the film and what could I have done different. You know, they thought it was a head injury, a concussion, and you know, they were real careful about what if it was a concussion, and it turns out it wasn't. And so, you know, it was just one of those, it was a freak thing that happened. And again, I don't think there's a larger sort of story to be told or to be divined from Evan's death other than that football is just a dangerous game.
Mm-hmm. Lars, a last thought, and you said when we started talking that you spent a lot of time on this story. How long are you willing to say that you spent on this? I mean, the stories from the incident was 2 years ago. It published now as football season kind of kicks off. How long did you work on this?
I mean, I think I worked. I sent the first letter to the family, and I also sent in a copy of one of my books on the Manning family about a year ago. And so, and again, I thought this could be a therapeutic healing mm-hmm. thing for them, and I had no idea the depth of the story. I had no idea until I got there. All I knew was that Evan had passed away. And I didn't even really understand how, and again, it was the honesty of the family. It's the honesty of the subject that always create, I think, really powerful journalism. And I think that honesty was created because they trusted me, and they knew I wasn't going anywhere. They knew my track record, and then you know, we spent again a lot of time together out there, and I was real careful when I was writing the story to be sensitive and it's one of these pieces where you don't want to overwrite it. And I specifically didn't include many quotes in it because I didn't want to just distract readers from the narrative flow. And it was very difficult. I mean, it's one of these pieces I'm never going to let go of. But you know, my wife tells me it's time for me to move on because it's been such a part of just my life. Because again, I really tried to sink into it to the point where I was a family member and sort of experiencing the emotions along with the family, and then trying to convey what the family was feeling almost in real time 2 years ago. And then, you know, flash forward to what's going on now. So like I said, yeah, it was the hardest thing I've ever written, and just the devastation that has been wrought by his death is unlike anything I've seen one family go through.
Lars Anderson, senior writer, Bleacher Report. Please read him and follow him at LarsAnderson71. Lars, thanks for your work. Thanks for your time, bud. We'll chat soon.
All right, have your topic next time. Thanks.
And we're back.
Fellas, think we could listen to the radio
on Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
It's very sneaky.
Yeah, very sneaky.
That's all I'm going to say about that.
The cat seems to be out of the bag, though. Do you like that, or do you prefer to have it out of the bag?
Sneaky. Sneaky. That's the only thing I can say. Next question, please. Now you're making me uncomfortable.
Don't be uncomfortable, Coach. Derek Peterson of HailVarsity.com and magazine. The cool coach. Derek asked him about it yesterday. I'm anxious to spend a few minutes here with Derek Peterson at Dr. Petey 15 on Twitter. Derek, what's good, man? How are you?
I'm good, man. My my better half is in town for the weekend, so it's shaping up to be a good couple days.
Awesome. How are you? I'm good. My better half's birthday is today, and I'm doing a football game in about an hour and a half, so she's real happy. She doesn't have to put up with me on a Friday night. It's a gift that keeps on giving, my man. Football season.
Oh, yeah. Football's back.
It is. It is. Hey, you asked Coach Riley about the cool coach rep, the persona. It was dubbed so by our own Jim Rome here, at least in Lincoln, where you hear him every day. And got to get your reaction, because you asked him about it. What were you thinking he would respond with? Because he felt like, oh, man. I mean, he was just like kind of not embarrassed, but just a little squeamish about it. He doesn't like to beat his own chest, does he?
No. That's about what I was expecting, too, him to kind of just play it off and – seems like I asked a couple of players about him, and it seems like he's the type of guy that's going to be cool and kind of do those sly things when you're not paying attention. But then when you call him out on it, he doesn't really want to take a lot of the praise or the attention or things like that. So the answer that I got wasn't surprising at all.
Sneaky,
great though.
Yeah, he's awesome. That was fantastic video footage you have. Can see it on HaleVarsity.com. So. With Riley here, you're a guy that has covered a lot of Big 12 and a lot of Oklahoma, and you've been to Nebraska here for about a month. And what was your vision and what was your kind of if you had preconceived notions, what did you think of a guy like Riley before you got here? And what's your opinion of him now, just as far as how he's handled this camp and the outside view, so to speak?
I got to tell you, I was not expecting a guy that is going to, you know, dap it up with Chance the Rapper and caption tweets with Kendrick Lamar lyrics. That's not what I was expecting at all. So that's awesome to be around that kind of a guy. But he fits the bill in terms of what I was kind of told to expect coming over. Really awesome, kind, just really genuine, down-to-earth guy. I talked to a couple people that have said, you know, you'll see him out on the town and he'll remember your name and talk to you about things and just talk to you like you're a normal person. And that's the impression that I've gotten around him so far. He just seems like a really genuine guy. So, you know, when people tell you that, you know, he's the kind guy, they're not lying.
Derek Peterson's with us here, HaleVarsity.com and magazine at Dr. PD15 on Twitter. So, The hot reads this morning reflect on kind of the national buzz Nebraska's getting that goes with Riley being that cool coach. It also goes with every national media member. Look out for this Tanner Lee guy. You know, it's good, I guess. But where's Nebraska at now, in your opinion, as the season kicks off in 7 days and in a few hours here? Have they moved on to the... Well, they could put a run together, or are they still kind of, just more under the radar than off the radar? How would you describe them, their reputation heading into this year?
I don't think they're off the radar. I think this is they're very much a team that, I mean, when you look at it, that Oregon game week two is going to tell you a lot. If they win that game, you could go into the Wisconsin game without a loss. And you're kind of in a similar situation that you were in last year. They're not going to be like top 10 anytime soon, unless something drastic happens. But I don't think they're off the radar. I don't think they're underrated yet, just because they have to prove some things when we get started. But, you know, in a couple weeks' time, they could be a top 25 team, if not kind of in that conversation. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't surprise me. Depending on how that Oregon game goes, that Oregon game is the big one.
It is. It will say a lot about the team, the leadership, the offense, and the defense. And I mean, Oregon's new. They're hitting reset as well. But I mean, Taggart's done some pretty incredible things wherever he's been. It might be a big ask for him to be, you know, Pac-12 North good, you know, this first year, but he'll have him up and running. The defense is the big issue with Oregon. So what's been your takeaway this fourth week now with Nebraska? What were some of the things you were looking for, and did you get any answers in regards to the team moving forward They're doing more Arkansas State, I understand. But what were you interested in this week, and what did you take away? How was the week?
We still don't know about the running back spot. It seems like they kind of just keep wanting to wait and see on that. We got clarification on the offensive line, so I think that'll help that group moving forward. They know who's going to be starting. They know who's going to be kind of in which position, and I think that that'll help that group moving forward as we get closer to the season, kind of gain some momentum and get a little bit of chemistry going together. So I think that that helps. Obviously, we didn't get to watch anything this week, so it's a little hard to know kind of where they're at in terms of preparation, but Riley has been pleased from what he's told us. I mean, I can't imagine he would tell us, you know, yeah, the team had a real crappy week of practice, but he seems to be pleased for the most part with what he's seen. And from what we saw last week, I mean, the defense looks good, and Tanner Lee obviously looks good. So I think it's coming together.
Who do you think they're torn on in regards to the red shirt? Because they have not named captains. They have not done the red shirt thing. And who do you think's up in the air? They're waiting on.
Yeah, we were talking about this in the office earlier. We were talking about captains. We think, you know, Tanner Lee and Chris Weber are probably a given at this point. Maybe Aaron Williams and him being at Big Ten Media Days last month is an indication that maybe he's a captain. I don't really know on red shirts. I mean, he waited so long last year, and it seems like he's doing kind of the same thing this year. I don't know if we really have an indication as to who's going to get redshirted. You and I talked about Jalen Bradley last week. He might be a guy that doesn't get redshirted, that gets reps this season, especially considering how, they don't have a back right now that they like. Yeah. So those questions are still kind of up in the air. I think we'll find out Monday, though. I think we'll find out redshirt and captains on Monday. Riley told us on Tuesday that he'd made some of those decisions yet, but they weren't all the way made, so he's going to hold off on announcing things. That's probably why we didn't watch practice this week, because I was talking to Eric Lee about when he got redshirted, when he found out that that was happening, and his response was very blunt. He just said, I stopped getting reps in practice, and then I kind of knew that it was coming. So, maybe a couple guys here in the next couple days. I don't really know. We don't really know.
Well, the guys that you think are going to play, obviously Tyjon Lindsey and Avery Roberts, and you have Deontre Thomas and Guy Thomas are two guys that you're wondering about. I mean, Deontre has made a surge at that nose spot. So
he really has. Yeah, he looks good.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think he looks like ready. So why waste him and put some of that versatility in there? Guy is, you know, is he going to be marketably better than Cedric or Alex Davis? You just don't know. But if don't limit yourself either with the importance of that position. So maybe you don't redshirt him. And from there on, I mean, the other guy is Hymus. I'm wondered about at the tackle spot, because he's new and he's looked pretty good. I mean, those are kind of the guys I have circled, and I'm waiting to hear everybody else. We haven't heard too much about. Am I missing anyone?
No, not that immediately comes to mind.
All right, so your better half is in town. Before we say goodbye, the Dr. PD15 on Twitter is where you find and follow him. What are the dinner plans tonight? What are you doing? What are you? How are you showing that significant other, Lincoln?
We just had Laszlo's.
Safe and solid and awesome choice.
Yeah, it was quite tasty. Definitely a place that we will be going back to. I had Oklahoma Joe's barbecue a couple nights ago. Felt right at home. It was like one of the best brisket sandwiches I've had in a long time. So
that place is...
And it was cheap, too.
Yeah.
That will be a place that will be a staple for me, at least.
No, good. No, we went there before the fight with the Junior and Mama, and it was good. And well done. So I'm interrupting you time right now, and you're kind enough to you've already had dinner. Okay, so what I'm gonna tell you is enjoy your night. I'm not going to talk any more football to you for probably 36 hours. Is that okay?
Hey, there's always time to talk football.
I know.
Always time for you, Shane.
Well, you're very kind. Yeah, we had dinner. That means you're still having dinner. And I'm interrupting. So Derek Peterson's awesome. Please read him on Hail Varsity. Great coverage in Nebraska. And you can follow him on Twitter at DrPD15. Derek, take care, man. And thanks for a few minutes with us today.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
See you, man. There he is. Good stuff. Derek Peterson. Man, I feel awkward and awful now. Your friend comes up, and yeah, dinner was awesome, but I got to do a football interview. You can say no, but he didn't, which is awesome, which is good. Should we do a caller 10 right now? Cue to call here. Lincoln Race Course has live races the 8th and 15th of September. Post time at 6 and 7, the second annual mascot race. Great goodies, T-shirts, food and drink specials. And for more info, LincolnRacing.com for details. $25 gift card. We want to see you out there. Enjoy it. Here's that cue to call.
You talking about the horse that runs up and down the field every
day? Oh, yes. I've had my eye on that wonderful beast for decades.
I didn't really picture you as a guy who played the ponies.
Play them ponies. What'd I say, 5 or 10? I said 10? That's a little risky. Caller 10 now. 466-3776. 466-3776. 800-825-5865. Caller 10 now. Lincoln Race Course, $25 gift card. As Caller 10 gets it, our conversation with Coach Ryan Gatula, Southeast, Northeast tonight at Seacrest here in Lincoln. Football all around the Hail Varsity Radio Network. So love you some high school ball. Coach Gatula next.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
High school football season is back again. Let's talk to Lincoln Southeast head coach Ryan Gatula. The Knights and the Rockets set to go at Seacrest, 7 o'clock. Coach Gatula, thanks for a few minutes. How's your day going?
Going well. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Well, how pleased are you? How excited are you about this 2017 group of Knights?
Oh, we're very excited. You know, they're at a point where they're ready to play a game, tired of practicing against each other. You know, a lot of these guys have been looking forward to this opportunity since last November, and they're ready to get on the field and play.
What's your message to the upperclassmen? What's those upperclassmen's message to the younger guys when it comes to culture? What type of tone do you set in that locker room?
Well, you know, I think our senior class, we've had great leadership from that group. A number of guys in that class have varsity experience at this point. You know, they've played in some pretty big games. And so they've really done a great job, not just during fall camp here, but also all summer long of establishing a culture of what we're about in the weight room and in the off season. And so great group of senior leaders that we have.
We're talking with Ryan Gatula, head coach, Lincoln Southeast, as he joins us here ahead of Southeast and Northeast. Well, I had a chance to talk to Bryson Williams after his commitment to Wisconsin, and I've enjoyed watching him the last few years. He's just been dominant. And what type of senior year do you expect from him? And give folks kind of a sneak peek to his work ethic. His intelligence is off the charts, but I think it's matched by his work ethic. You could probably attest to that.
Well, definitely. And we expect a lot from Bryson. Obviously, he's been very dominant for us on the defensive line. really the past two seasons. You know, a big thing with Bryson is we expect him to be able to play both sides of the ball for us this next year. So he'll play both offensive and defensive line for us. And as you said, great work ethic. He's one of those guys I'm talking about as far as, you know, helping our younger kids in the weight room in the off season. And, you know, he's somebody that you're not going to outwork, Bryson.
On the offensive side of the ball, Jack Strong. And I remember Jack playing, you know, that freshman year and seeing him grow and develop. And he's always been a big kid. But what are you asking from him this senior season at quarterback?
Well, he's very comfortable at this point in our offense, obviously. You know, he's a kid that I think Jack – obviously, he's threw for a really high percentage last season, but he also can make plays with his feet. You know, through the first five games, he was, you know, at least once a game, he had a big run that really helped us out. And so he's a guy that can get it done throwing the ball, help us with his legs. And he's another guy that's going to have to help us really on both sides of the ball this year and in special teams. He's a pretty talented kicker as well. And so we'll look for him to help us out in that regard.
With Gergen, he showed nicely coming in, hitting 67% of his passes when Jack was dinged last year, and also his play as a free safety. Give folks a thought on Gergen, and is it Jampy? Help me with his first name.
Yeah, it's Jampy is how it's pronounced, but obviously both of them are outstanding quarterbacks.
Right.
Very fortunate to have that situation where I feel comfortable with either one of those guys in the game running our offense. And as I said, both of them are guys that are going to have to help us on the defensive side of the ball as well. But they're fantastic kids, number one. They compete against each other in practice, make each other better. But they're great kids, outstanding work ethic, and they just not just good quarterbacks but good football players. So they can help us in multiple regards.
Coach, how do you go about developing that depth? I know there's freshmen, there's JV ball, but when it comes time to jump to the varsity level at Southeast, very storied program in the state of Nebraska, how have you gone about getting as many reps to kids? And the one thing Southeast has been great at when they've been great has been the lines of scrimmage. How do you go about that that construction of, you know, from a practice, how do you get all the reps you can and all that development in today's climate of football with from a contact concern standpoint?
Right. Well, our numbers have been really very good. Our numbers this year are outstanding. We had 70 freshmen or more that came out for freshman football. We practice really together. All the kids from their sophomore through seniors practice together. So they work technique together. So those younger kids as sophomores are in position drills and working technique with the older guys. And I think that really helps as far as the development, the expectations of, you know, what we expect from each position. Sophomore in our program is doing the exact same drills as Bryson Williams or Jack Strong. And so I think that's really helped with our development.
Offensively here, a couple more minutes here. Coach Ryan Gattula with us here as Southeast and Northeast set to go. With your offense, you're pretty multiple, and you kind of explain that if you could. I get it. Maybe a listener or two does as well. But when you say multiple, how do you stay kind of anchored to a certain philosophy, but yet kind of exploit the defense different ways? How do you become that versatile?
Well, you know, I think with us, we have certain base plays that we want to be great at. And so that's certainly something we're going to rep a lot. Offensively, we want to be balanced. And, you know, when we talk to the kids, balance may not look the same every week. We want to be able to run the ball or throw the ball based on the look that we're getting. And so, you know, certain weeks we may have to run the ball a little more, whereas other weeks, you know, based on the defense that we're seeing or the look we're getting, we may have to throw the ball. But we want to be able to do whatever, you know, is going to allow our offense to be successful. And so it takes a lot of repetition, but our guys have done a great job of picking that up. I thought last year our offense did a nice job throughout the season, and We have a number of guys returning. Certainly receiver is a position where we lost all three of our starters, but certainly we have good athletes there, and we expect those guys to step in and take advantage of their opportunity.
Do you like that dimension that being a power two-back I team gives you, as well as the ability with the athletes, specifically with strong at quarterback, to go spread when you want? Are you pretty unique in that aspect, do you feel?
I don't know if we're unique, but we will always rely on a physical run game. I think if you're going to win games at the end of the year in the playoffs, you're going to have to be able to play that type of football, especially with the weather in Nebraska. There's going to be certain instances where you may not be able to throw the ball. And so we're always going to focus on a physical run game and development of a strong offensive line.
Coach, what do you think of Northeast? A lot of talent, and Coach Bump is going to have his kids ready. What do you think about this matchup?
Well, Northeast, they're always a physical football team. Traditionally, they've had some really good team speed that they can challenge you with that. And so, they may have some new kids starting at different positions, but we know that they have some excellent athletes. And we've been trying to focus really on us through the first few weeks here and make sure that we're doing what we need to do as a team to get better every day. But we know Northeast is going to have some good athletes and play physical football. They always do.
Southeast head football coach Ryan Gattullo, the Knights and the Rockets. Coach, thanks for a few minutes today.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me on.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Welcome back to Hail Varsity Radio. I'm Danny Burke, your producer of the show. Decided to kick Schmitty out. I got to change up the pace a little bit. Hopefully he didn't hear that. Nah, I'm sure he'll forgive me. But anyways, wanted to get back on the topic of the McGregor-Mayweather fight. The huge fight tomorrow. Everyone's excited. I'm excited. Hopefully it won't be a bust. It can't be too much worse than the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight, but we'll see. So anyways, I wanted to go over the topic of the gloves. They're supposed to be at the 10-ounce gloves. They changed it to the 8-ounce. Now, McGregor usually did the 4-ounce gloves with MMA fighting, and obviously Mayweather did the 10-ounce. So let's see what their thoughts were on that, starting with Floyd.
More excitement. I want more excitement. The fans want to see more blood. And like I said, I know he's used to fighting in 4-ounce gloves. So I want him, if he want to feel like 8-ounce gloves is a better advantage, let's do it.
Okay, so Mayweather looking like he's kind of making it seem more equal for both of them. That could almost be a diss to Conor, saying he's going to try to give him as much edge as he needs so the fight can be a little bit more fair. Well, McGregor obviously doesn't think the same, as he thinks that's just another mistake that Mayweather would make.
8-ounce gloves, he made a big, big error in my opinion. I don't see him lasting 2 rounds. I feel I would have the decision to end it inside 1. Yeah, look, he messed up with them 8-ounce gloves. It was amusing all that as well, but I'm very, very happy with the 8. We usually fight in 4. We're going to fight in 8. Keep your hands up, keep your hands down. I don't care. I'm going to break through whatever's in front of me.
So there's McGregor's take on that. Obviously, he didn't expect anything less. Him having confidence in himself, as he typically does. It's going to be a faster game with the less weight. Wonder how much of an impact those 2 ounces will really make. I guess we can only tell by watching tomorrow, but I honestly think it'll make a little bit of a difference. McGregor will hit harder. Floyd will be faster, that's for sure, which can't help McGregor, and McGregor's going to need everything he can get. But like we mentioned earlier, I'm a big McGregor guy. I got the Irish heritage, been watching him for a while now, and he's really just bringing the attention to the boxing world if you're not as big into boxing as some of the old school people. MMA, UFC, that's what's coming up nowadays, and he's really changing the game now, trying to go to boxing and make it big. So we'll see what he can do. But anyways, I read an interesting article today talking about the bets and everything that's going on with that. And they were saying if McGregor were to pull off an upset, the payouts would result in the biggest single event loss. So that's interesting to see that. I personally put a little bit of money on McGregor because the payout's pretty good if he were to win. We'll see if that happens. But yeah, they're saying that the big bettors, the usual people who are throwing, thousands of dollars and whatnot, are betting on Mayweather. And the average Joes, your butchers, your barbers, they're throwing about $100 on McGregor because he has the best odds, obviously. That makes sense. So we'll see how that turns out with that going on. We'll see what happens to Vegas if McGregor does end up winning. If Mayweather does, same old's going to happen. The favorite wins. So we'll just see how that goes tomorrow. So I can't wait for the fight to happen. I'll be posted up with some of my friends hanging out. A lot of them obviously rooting for Mayweather. They're picking the favorite, but I'm always a big underdog guy. Got to have some pride in my heritage, and it's always nice to see a guy who's 49-0 to go down, you know? Nothing more fun than seeing the guy on the top being cocky. Granted, McGregor's cocky too, but there's something about Mayweather that cockiness just, I don't know, you just want to see that go down. Nothing funnier than 49-1. But anyways, that's tonight's show. We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening.